This is the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
I'm really hoping that Jorge Masvidal and Usman find a way to fight.
UFC 251, it will take place in Abu Dhabi.
I'm going to pick Usman, but man, Masvidal is dangerous.
Golic and Wingo here with you on ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Our phone guest will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We'll have Ariel Helwani coming up a little bit later to talk about Jorge Masvidal and Usman coming up again. It's going to be this weekend at Fight Island, which we found is a real thing. It's spectacular. And this is interesting, Junior, because the last time we saw these two was at the Super Bowl, right before, right in front of our set in South Beach, not South Beach, but in downtown Miami. And my God, they almost went at it in street clothes.
It got spicy there quickly, and there were plenty of video from that altercation. You can go and check it out on there, but make no mistake about it, these two do not like each other. And so that is the backdrop for the fight that we wanted to happen in this one. We wanted Masvidal, we wanted Usman. Obviously, everyone who's, I think, been tuning into ESPN has seen Jorge Masvidal has been someone that the Lebatard Show has really loved and adopted, a Miami guy, a lot like them they've talked to. We expect Stugatz to maybe try and wiggle his way into Abu Dhabi, but we weren't sure that Masvidal was going to be there. UFC and him had difficulties in negotiations that had led to, in this situation, Gilbert Burns being the original portion of this fight removed there. He tweeted out that, you know, he's not feeling well. Right. So, you know, you can infer what
read
goes
into
on
that
there,
what you will.
But he is now out, and it appears Jorge Masvidal, according to our own Ariel Helwani, as of 12:12 a.m. last night, this morning, however you phrase that, Masvidal is on his way to Abu Dhabi. He had been out in Las Vegas. He had passed his initial COVID-19 test there and now is good to go. They've got to pass, I believe, two more tests before they get to be able to fight in Fight Island, but they are on their way to the fight we all wanted to begin with.
Yeah, just so people understand from a logistics standpoint, here's what has to go on. They have to pass a test in Vegas, and then they fly to Abu Dhabi, take a second COVID test at a hotel and a quarantine pass, take a third COVID test quarantine pass, make weight Friday, take the fourth COVID test quarantine pass after weigh-ins, and then you have the fight. So we're talking about the beginning of a long process. And it's interesting, right? Masvidal is taking a title fight with just a week notice. And we talked about that, was it what, 250 or 249? Someone got in there real quick and didn't have the proper prep time. I can't remember who it was.
It was when we were talking about, and I'm his name's escaping me, but it was the conversation about his corner not stopping the fight when
correct.
He asked nine times because he took the fight on a week's notice. Now, a bit different here because, by all accounts, everyone in Masvidal's camp says he hasn't stopped training this entire time. He's been training as if he were going to be a part of the fight, so it tends to work out pretty well because it does beg the question, who is kind of exposing themselves to more risk at this? You've got Usman, who's all of a sudden now on a week's notice going to be taking on a fighter that he wasn't preparing for versus Jorge Masvidal, who's going into this in theory on short notice, even though that we know physically that's not necessarily the case.
All right, here's Dana White, UFC president, on what it took to get this fight together again because Gilbert Burns had to drop out.
If you look at the 20-year history, this kind of stuff happens. When you get into negotiations for fights, these things happen. Gilbert Burns has been on a tear, was consistently fighting and wanted to continue to fight. And he was the number one contender, so Gilbert Burns made sense. Obviously, Masvidal has become a massive star over the last year and a half, and that's the fight that the people want to see. So when Burns fell out, we got in a room and figured Masvidal out.
They finally gave him the money he was looking for. Like Jorge Masvidal thought, like you said, he was fighter of the year last year. He had the BMF belt that he had fought for. He was a guy whose stock is on the rise.
Eating pizza and drinking some sort of whiskey after baptizing somebody in his last fight.
It's a beautiful thing. Great. And so he thought he was owed a certain amount of money. And what happened is because Burns had to bow out for the reasons that we're all well acquainted with right now, it gave Masvidal a ton of leverage in this situation. Yep. I'd be very curious what kind of payday he was able to secure for this because you'd have to imagine on short notice to get the fight that UFC wanted all along really in this situation, they probably had to pay the piper.
Well, and I think Masvidal has had more fights than anyone in history. A championship fight, 40 plus fights he's gone there. So there had been some financial back and forth between these guys. So I'm sure you're right. Masvidal saw a financial opening and probably was able to garner himself a nice payday here.
Because this is a guy that we talked about this as it related to as it related to Conor McGregor a while back. This idea that Conor McGregor wants another crack at all this one, wants another kick at the can. But we said he's maybe one more loss from starting to fade into the distance, despite being the biggest star that the sport had ever seen.
Correct.
I mean, that $4 billion valuation and sale that the UFC ultimately went for owes a lot of it to the groundswell of support that certainly others have contributed to. But Conor McGregor was the most notable.
Absolutely.
No doubt in that. And so you're always looking and wondering what could be next. I mean, you look at Jorge Masvidal, big personality, a guy who has, again, had this massive ascension in recent years, and if you cap that with a title now, all of a sudden you might have the sport's next big-time star.
Absolutely, and so he's getting ready to fight. Now, again, we referenced this earlier. Before, or the last time they were sort of together, Usman and Masvidal had a huge sort of public spat at Radio Row. Super Bowl.
Like, for anyone that's never been around it or whatever, Radio Row, it's like a bunch of just radio stands set up for all these local stations. We had our thing there. Like, it's a hectic environment, but it's not one that's overly charged like that. Yeah. It's a lot of, you know, overweight sports talk radio people like us slugging coffee and walking around like zombies.
It's the lowest rung on the human food chain. Let's be clear. Radio World is the lowest rung on the human food chain.
It's like Mark Schlereth always said that once you get to offensive line, the next thing that you evolve into, you know, a wide receiver can eat their way into a tight end. Yeah. A DN can eat their way to a D tackle. Yeah. A guard becomes a fan after that.
That's exactly right.
A guard becomes a sports talk radio
exactly.
host, then a fan.
Which Mark Schlereth has become. So congratulations to him. But this all took place right in front of our set, by the way, at Golic and Wingo when we were at the Super Bowl. And here was Masvidal, the UFC fighter, explaining the altercation at Radio Row in January. This is what he said at the time.
Well, I just told him, I go, man, you've been talking a lot of shit, saying this and that. I'm going to straight up say it to your face. You're not there for nobody else. He goes, what's that? I go, I'm going to fuck you up. You know, I'm just letting you know, I'm going to embarrass you from start to finish so you don't hear she say stuff. No, I'm letting you know right to your face. I'm going to f*** you up the same way that I've let a lot of my opponents before. You know, I like to do it more in private if it could just be me and them and look them right in the soul and tell them I'm going to f*** you up. But, you know, I didn't get that chance with this dude. I don't like Usman, you know. If I could have altercations with him every day, I would have.
And for people that don't know a lot about Masvidal, he grew up as a sort of backyard fighter in Miami. And people are like, are you concerned about the short fight? He was once, I think Ariel tweeted this earlier, and he'll join us a little bit later on this morning. He once got a call while he was working at a McDonald's to come do a backyard fight against a Kimbo Slice protege in Miami. He just showed up and won. He won that fight too. So I don't think taking a fight on a week's notice is going to be a big problem for him.
Yeah, going from McDonald's to a backyard to a week's notice going to Abu Dhabi for Fight
Island
is the kind of come up that I think any fighter would sign up for. So I'm sure he's going to be ready for it. It sounds like we may get exactly what he's wanted for about a year now.
Yeah, and Ariel will join us in just a little bit, about a couple hours from now, to talk about that fight and everything else that's going on. But coming up next, there is growing momentum internally on the idea of the Washington NFL franchise changing its name for good. We'll ask a member of their Ring of Fame to discuss the matter. That's next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2.
Golic.
Golic and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr., Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, including our next guest, who has a long time been a fixture of the Washington football team, Brian Mitchell, of course, great running back, returner, you name it. He done it, receiver out of the backfield. He's in the Redskins Ring of Honor. He works for NBC Sports Washington. Just basically a fixture for the team for many, many years. Excuse me. And we're delighted to join by Brian Mitchell now. Brian, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your time.
Oh, no problem.
What has your reaction been, and what are you hearing from fans in the area about the potential, although not official, but the potential of Washington changing the franchise team name?
Well, a lot of fans, you know, they feel they want to hold on to it, but there are a lot of fans that understand what's going on. They understand the climate of what's happening now. And I think so many times we get so caught up in the fact that we think we're showing honor. We can't tell somebody what shows them honor. If something offends them, it offends them. And I think right now you can see from Dan and many people around the organization, they're starting to understand that I have to listen and begin to move forward.
Brian, and I'm sure you get this question a lot, but as someone who was playing there, what was it like as a player hearing this name, hearing the controversy that may or may not have been talked about around it when you were a part of the team? What was it like hearing and knowing that name was a part of who you guys were as a team?
Well, for me, it was like, you know, I got here in 1990, and I was asked the question then, and I felt then that, you know, you should have an adult, mature conversation and listen, and then things can happen. I felt that same way. And for me, I never really thought it was something that I can change because, you know, I wasn't the owner. Jack King Cook was at first. Then Dan came along later on and took over. I felt that those people needed to sit down and have those conversations, which seems to be happening now. And I understand people are going to say it's because of the money aspect in it, but still, you have to be a person willing to sit down and willing to change.
Brian Mitchell with us again in the team's Ring of Fame. And you mentioned the money aspect of it. That can't be overstated here. You have both Nike, who's basically taken them off the list of teams in the NFL and the products that they sell, and then FedEx, who, of course, have the naming rights to the stadium as it currently exists. And, of course, he's trying to get a new stadium, Daniel Snyder is, built downtown at the site of old RFK. How much of the financial pressure do you think is a part of this?
I think it had a lot to do with it, you know, but I think also those companies were getting pressure, too. I think we look at a few days ago, it was a bunch of shareholders and investors that were worth $620 billion that started to speak up. And then you saw those companies, and those companies began to put the pressure on them. So I look at the fact that everybody was getting pressure, and it came from everywhere. And I both of you all know, you know, go again, Wingo. Y'all both understand that in this day and age, people don't do things until that money pressure begins to come on them. And when that happens, you see things happen rather quickly.
So, Brian, I'm curious. You work for NBC Sports Washington. You've got a radio show in the afternoon. We mentioned you're hearing from fans a lot in all this. And the one thing that we've heard consistently is the complaint that, well, if you change the name, you're going to alienate a lot of fans. Do you think that there's really going to be a mass exodus of fans, or do you think that this could actually open it up for more people to embrace the team?
I go with the latter. I think it's going to open it up for more people. And I asked the question on my radio show this week. Do you cheer for the name, or do you cheer for the players? Do you cheer for the organization? You know, the name is not necessarily what somebody cheer for. I just think that's our way as Americans, where we're selfish. We want what we want no matter what it does to somebody else. And all these people that are saying, well, if the name changed, I'm going, well, you wasn't a fan anyway. I've never seen someone buy a jersey and put the name of the team on the back of it. They put the name of the players on the back of it. So if you love this organization and you see them changing for the better, and if they come out and start winning, the same people around here that had pride in that organization before is going to have pride moving forward.
I do find it kind of funny that they put up with all the losing over the years and they stayed loyal to the organization through all these horrible losing seasons, but then you change the name and that's when they're going to leave? I find that to be a little disingenuous.
It is. I believe that. I think those same people are going to be here because what we do, we find out, we begin to love what's here. You know, we love it because it's a part of the area that you live in, the area that you grew up in. And I think if that continues, if they start changing that, which I believe is going to start changing, I believe Ron Rivera has been a big influence for the people on the field and even all this stuff going on right now. So I'm expecting a lot of better things to start happening for this organization.
Brian Mitchell with us here on Golic and Wingo, former Washington running back, talking with us. And you mentioned the money in all this, and you mentioned the influence around Daniel Snyder. We heard coming off the weekend that a group of minority shareholders who own roughly 40% of the team are in talks right now to potentially sell their stake in the team because they no longer feel comfortable being around Dan Snyder. Do you find the timing of that curious, that now is all this change is on the horizon that this group would be looking to get out at this point?
Yeah, I find that rather strange. And, you know, I've been researching to try to find out any truth to it, but you don't know anything now. I don't know that this is factual because when I look at it, why would someone want to back out right now? You know, unless it's a way of trying to see if more potential people want to come in, which does what? Pushes your evaluation up, which would help all of those guys too. So I'm a little skeptical on that article coming out at this time.
Again, that was something in the Washington Post, and we'll see what happens with those three minority investments that make about 40% of the team. And again, we use minority as in less than the majority.
And one of those guys was Fred Smith, who is working with FedEx. So you understand?
Right, absolutely.
So we'll see exactly where that goes.
Those are big dollars we're talking about than anything else. So, Brian, let me ask you this. You know Daniel Snyder. You were playing for him when he owned the team. You know that he has used the word never 100 times over when talking mm-hmm. about this. It's going to actually be his call at some point. Do yes. you think he's really at a place finally where he's understanding that this has to happen?
Totally. I think he is. And this is the thing about it. I felt all this time Dan has had people around him that basically told him what he wanted to hear. They've shielded other people from getting to him, so I guess they wouldn't get the right information to him. And now, ever since he started going on this search with Ron, he's kind of stepped out of that. And I've always said that I felt if he made his own decisions, that's the thing about I noticed, when he's around himself and he's having conversations, he's engaging. When he was around a lot of the people that were surrounding him and Bruce and Vinny and all those guys, he's a different person. So I think at this point, thinking for yourself is going to move things in the right direction. And I think he is totally – he understands that, you know, I need to do this. It's the right thing to do.
What is it about Ron Rivera that's been such a positive influence here?
You know, I was with Ron up there in Philly, and the thing I've always noticed about him is that he's fair and people believed in him. And I think now you see he's having that same influence on Dan. He's having that same influence on most of the people around here, too. But, you know, ultimately you still want to see him go out there and win on the football field. But the thing about it, when he's asked questions, he doesn't try to skirt all the questions. You know, he's talking in a fair manner. Like, they ask him about the kneeling aspect. It's a constitutional right. You know, why am I to sit here and try to stop somebody from doing what they have the right to do? So I think just that type of answer makes a lot of guys feel a lot more comfortable with him. You know, and I'm not trying to sit up here and compare him to Joe, but Joe was the exact same way, to where he didn't answer questions to you in a way like, because I said so. It was, he did everything based off of what was fair. And then when people see a coach being that way, they want to do anything they can for him to have him, make sure he has success.
Yeah, that Joe being, of course, Joe Gibbs, Hall of Fame yes. coach, who led the Redskins to three Super Bowl championships, which you were a part of one of those, with three different starting quarterbacks, by the way. That never gets enough credit that he did it with three different starting quarterbacks and won three Super Bowls. So, Brian, let's move this thing forward. Let's assume that this is going to happen. Have you heard or has there been any sort of talk about what that name should be, or is it still too much of a flashpoint to even think about moving on yet as part of that discussion in the D.C. area?
Well, yeah, people have been throwing names around all the time. And a lot of people are trying to, you know, they are saying they should use a name that still has the R in it because they want to be able to still have the HTTR. And Dan has made the comments that he wants to do something that's going to show honor and respect to the Indian Nation and also the military. So I think if you've got to move on, I've had people come to me, you talk so much about the Native Americans, you talk about the Native D.C. people, the Natives. You know, I've had people say different things about the nation because all of the, mostly the Iroquois Nation and the Cherokee Nation, those type of things. But ultimately, it's been names from Red Hawks or Red Tails. You know, if you open up the phone lines, you're going to get something from A to Z, to be totally honest with you.
How about the Washington Pigskins? Because they were the hogs up front. Just the Washington Pigskins football.
Trey is really all in, Brian, on any sort of pig-related name in all this one as a friend of large people everywhere.
They've said the Pigskins, they've said the Hogs, but if you go by what he said, that he wants to make sure it's going to be a name to show that honor and respect for, you know, the same population that people felt that the name was demeaning them from the beginning, and also on top of that, the military. I don't know if the Pigskins are going to work.
So we have to ask you, as Brian Mitchell is with us, we have to ask you about something that popped up on Twitter over the weekend. I'm sure you saw it. Asante Samuel, who was a really good cornerback for a lot of years in the NFL, came up with the Patriots, then went to Philly and other places, just decided to poke a bear here that I'm not sure he understood what road he was going down. He basically put out a tweet asking, hey, tell me why Darryl Green is so great. He did all this nickel stuff and only had 45 interceptions, blah, 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 blah. And, of course, he got roasted by a million people, including Hall of Fame head coach Tony Dungy. Uh-huh. But as someone who played with Darryl Green, can you just set the record straight for people how incredible Darryl was as a player?
Listen, he wasn't just a nickel guy. guy played for 20 years running a 4.240 or better. The thing about Darryl is most of his career, teams wasn't just throwing the football around like they do today, like they did most of Asante Samuel's career. And most times when we played against people, they didn't go at Darryl Green. And I think that's the whole thing. You know, if you're throwing the ball 35, 40 times a game in this day and age, the defensive backs have a big opportunity to go get interceptions. And then on top of that, he's a terrific guy. You know, I think that's the whole thing. And I saw him for that, and I answered to him, too. I told him, if you don't understand, then you're a fool. Point blank.
Yeah, I mean, look, I saw that, and I was like, really? There, you want to go there? You want to go there with Darryl Green, the guy who would show up and just not even stretch and beat everybody in the NFL as the fastest man in the league for, what, five straight years? He was remarkable.
Yes. No, I don't understand that one. You know, out of all the people you can pick with, Darryl's the last one to try and do it with.
Yes. It's just like pick 20 other people, man. Why are you going to 28? It just makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, really tough call on that one. So glad we were able to set the record on that in a number of ways. And, Brian, we certainly appreciate the time and perspective this morning on everything going on with the Washington football team and the name change. I'm sure we'll check in with you again soon.
Thanks,
okay,
Brian.
Man. Y'all have a great day. Take care, yourselves.
Yeah. Brian's smart, man.
He is, man. That Asante Samuel tweet did not go well for him.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
This is where I always think of Joe Dirt. This is where you want to be when Jesus come back, making fun of the little Joe Dirt. Like, this is where you want to be picking at the credentials of Darryl Green.
Darryl Green. I mean, pick a million other guys, but like it's the classic example of I'm going to look at some stats and not look at film. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's exactly what
you go back and you start looking at box scores and you see numbers that don't add up. You know, this interception count over the course of 20 years going to be interesting in this.
So we'll see what happens again with the change of the team name in Washington. They're undergoing that review. You know, it's interesting. You heard Brian Mitchell say that they want to do something that will show respect to Native people. I'm not sure Native people actually want that to be a part of it.
Yeah, I really feel like that might be something that as we go along here, and we'll get into this later because this is, I don't think, the ending for this idea of Native American-related mascots and what's going on. We'll hear from Tito Francona in a little bit about what might be the future for the Indians and a number of other teams that we haven't heard from yet that I have a feeling aren't going to be allowed to sit by idly and just wait in the wings on this conversation.
Yeah, the Atlanta Braves have made a comment. We'll get to all of that a little bit later, but now it's time for some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And, of course, baseball is trying to get back out there and get going. And we're in the process here, and you see some people working out at their facilities, teams working out at their stadiums. We had an unfortunate incident at Yankee Stadium where Giancarlo Stanton just rocked a line drive right back at Masahiro Tanaka, and he's dealing with a mild concussion. Thankfully, he's going to be okay. That could have been a lot worse.
I was going to say, thankfully, it wasn't like when Giancarlo Stanton got rocked in the face by a pitch and had the entire, you know, orbital bone, all that stuff there that you had to deal with. So it somehow just skates by with a concussion in this.
So mild concussion. Hopefully, the CT scan came back negative. Hopefully, he's going to be fine. But then as this is going on, you had Sean Doolittle of the Washington Nationals get up there and basically sort of speak a lot of truth, or tried to a lot of people about what we're trying to do with sports in a time where we are continuing to see coronavirus spike in more than half the states in the country.
We're trying to bring baseball back during a pandemic that's killed 130,000 people. We're way worse off as a country than where we were in March when we shut this thing down. And like, look at where other developed countries are in their response to this. We haven't done any of the things that other countries have done to bring sports back. Sports are like the reward of a functional society. And we're just trying to just bring it back, even though we've taken none of the steps to flatten the curve, whatever you want to say. We did flatten the curve for a little bit, but we didn't use that time to do anything productive. We just opened back up for Memorial Day. We decided we're done with it. If there aren't sports, it's going to be because people are not wearing masks, because the response to this has been so politicized. Like, we need help from the general public. If they want to watch baseball, like, please wear a mask, social distance, keep washing your hands. We can't just have virus fatigue and think, well, it's been 4 months, like, we're over it. This has been enough time, right? We've waited long enough. Like, shouldn't sports come back now? No, there's things we have to do in order to bring the stuff back. And now you want to bring fans back? Is that safe? I'm not a public health expert, but like, we should probably defer to them on some of these issues. So I don't know. I don't know if it's safe or not. I really don't know.
All of that, by the way, is the straightest talk you're ever going to get from Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. I mean, it's always what you say on Twitter. Spot the lie. Where? What has he said that's incorrect there? Have we done the things necessary as a country to bring this back? Or I think what he said was perfect. We're all just like, oh, we've done this for 4 months. Screw it. I'm over it. That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
It is so interesting, though. This all made me think of this idea of sports as a reward. Like, my brother was not a model student growing up. And you could punish him, you could do all these number of things. The only thing that ever really resonated was taking sports away, this idea that you cannot go on and take the field, the court, whatever it was, unless your stuff was right off the court when it came to school. And that was the only thing that ever really had an effect. And we saw this at the beginning with the shutdown, where sports started shutting down and people went, oh, this is real.
Right.
And then as time went along, Trey, you remember around the draft, there were a lot of people wondering, our own Adam Schefter wondered why we were going on and doing this in the time that they right. were. And one of the things that I understood as a concern, and that you can see kind of becoming a concern now, is the more you treat sports like everything is normal and it's going along as planned, the more society is going to think, huh, we're doing all right with this stuff. Yeah. Because for some reason, that's the only language that we're able to speak is, all right, are sports disrupted? If the answer is no on the flow chart here, then we seem to proceed
we're
as usual.
Good.
And we all go out to Diamond Lake and drink human soup in the water out
yeah.
there.
Yeah, there were a couple of videos over this week. I'm like, what are you doing?
You're doing exactly what we were all afraid of on 4th of July weekend. Right. I saw Cole Kublik, who does great work for us in the SEC Network and others, was on a podcast and said, I believe that July 4th weekend is the most important weekend that we have left when it comes to what's going to happen with college football this fall.
Yeah.
Because you could see in that a rash of positive tests depending on how these athletes chose to live over the weekend. Like, and that's what we could see with all of this. And it seems like unless we get, going back to the Major League Baseball example, you know, shut down something to kind of knock us off the perch of what we've got now, people are just going to seem to keep going on business as usual.
And again, the best thing that I think Sean said there is something that has been politicized that is not political in any way, shape, or form. It's the idea of wearing a face covering. It's been proven effective everywhere. Everywhere where you do this, it's proven to stop the spread of the virus. So why people are still refusing to do it, I have no idea.
Mike Trout's mom was tweeting about it.
Debbie Trout is a hero.
Mike Trout doesn't want to talk ever.
Yeah.
So I'd imagine Mike Trout's mom wants to talk even less. And you have all collectively forced that woman to come out with PSAs for wearing your mask involving her son. I mean, my God, look what you've done.
And then to that point, Myron Metcalf, who was on ESPN Radio over the weekend, basically brought up a very good point, because Trout has talked openly about whether or not he wants to be a part of this. He's there right now, and he's going through the process. But Myron brought up a very good point. Here he is explaining the significance of the idea of potentially Mike Trout deciding to opt out of baseball trying to start.
That is LeBron James coming out and saying, you know what, guys, I don't know if we should go to the bubble. That to me is Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady or Drew Brees stepping up and saying, should we really be having an NFL season this year? It's remarkable to me just the weight that this carries. Because to me, if Mike Trout isn't sure if he's going to play, then I think everybody else in Major League Baseball has to be thinking the same way. Because if Mike Trout pulls out, I think you would see a bunch of players in the coming weeks who would do the same thing.
He would be the Pied Piper here.
Maybe. Like Mike Trout as a player is absolutely in the category of those guys. But his name does not carry the weight like that. He doesn't speak for the sport like that. He barely speaks for himself half the time in all of this. So with all due respect to Myron, I flat out don't agree there. I think it would cause people to take notice, but I don't think all of a sudden Mike Trout is going to lead the cause on this.
Let me put it in a different perspective. I think you're right in terms of the public perception. But I think in terms of guys inside their game that have that kind of respect, yes, he would have that kind of it would have that kind of ripple effect among other baseball players about what are we doing.
I guess just as far as one of your best deciding not to go, which there could be financial implications.
Yes.
We know the haircut a lot of these guys are taking financially. But I just think as far as we've never heard Mike Trout as someone who's been the voice of the players the way LeBron James certainly is publicly,
yes.
The way Patrick Mahomes has become a visible face of the league. The dynamic's just not the same, at least as far as we see from the outside, because we barely get anything from Mike Trout from the outside. So we have really no idea.
But thank you to Mike Trout's mom. Basically, that tweet with him. If Mike Trout can run the bases wearing a mask, you can wear a mask. Hashtag wear a mask.
We're seeing all these guys. I saw a picture of LeBron James training with a mask on. Like, the best athletes in the world can go about and do this. I promise you, if they can do it, you can walk to the grocery store with one on.
You'll be fine. Coming up next, the Washington football team changing his name may just be the tip of the iceberg. We'll get to more of that next. Golic and Wingo.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night. Yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
right, Golic and Wingo here with you on a Monday morning. Hope you had a great 4th of July weekend. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. So we saw a lot of teams getting back into action at their facilities over the weekend in baseball as they get ready to ramp up and try to begin spring training and then get set for what we believe will be the start of the Major League Baseball season in just a couple of weeks. But there was a scary moment that you heard alluded to in the rejoin there as Giancarlo Stanton. Kind of interesting, ironic, coincidental, whatever you want to call it, that Giancarlo Stanton, who got rocked in the face a couple of years ago by a pitch and still has that big sort of batter or thing on his batting helmet.
That sort of shield as a part of his right. helmet to protect him. Because that was grisly. That was, you're talking the orbital bone, all those things that are
awful. It was
horrific.
Awful, and it was a line drive off the bat of Giancarlo Stanton that knocked out Masahiro Tanaka, and thankfully he's just being dealt with a mild concussion. The CT scans came back negative. So for more on that and all the things related to baseball, we're glad to be joined out by Marley Rivera, our ESPN Yankee reporter. And Marley, that was a scary moment at Yankee Stadium. It certainly looked like it could have been much worse for Tanaka.
No, absolutely, gentlemen. And one of the things that happened is that the Yankees were one of the teams that started a little bit later. Almost everyone started their, you know, quote-unquote, summer camp workouts or spring training 2.0, whatever it is, the new phrase that they're using for this. And it was almost every team started on Friday, and the Yankees started the workouts actually on Saturday, and we came in around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And as we went through the very, very enhanced screening process, that they have for all the, you know, the limited amount of members of the media be at Yankee Stadium on Saturday afternoon. As we're walking in, we sit down, we set our computer, and at that moment, the simulated game is about to start. And about 10 minutes in, this happens to Masahiro Tanaka, just a very, very scary moment. Unfortunately, I have been at stadiums when this has happened before, and it is one of those moments that everyone just holds their breath.
Yeah, absolutely. So best case scenario for him. So Marley, I'm just curious, as one of the few that's allowed in the stadium, can you tell us about the procedures and protocols that you had to go through to get into Yankee Stadium?
We have pretty strict ones, obviously not to the level of the players. What happens in this very, very, very long document that Major League Baseball and the Players Association agreed upon, which is called the 2020 operations manual, and it's well over 100 pages, and we all had to read it at ESPN, so we've seen all the details. For the players, it's extremely right, like there's different tiers, and we have zero access to the members of this called tier one and tier two in every team. They're never near us, but we are the tier three, and this tier three has a certain process. You have to stand in line, you have to get your temperature checked twice. You have to sign a document every single day where they ask you, you know, all these health questions. There's a very serious health questionnaire. And every single day you have to go in and pick up a credential, which is extremely different from how it works in a regular season. Reporters that cover a team have what it's called the season credential. And you can actually go in and out. And this is just very, very controlled because at this point, according to this operations manual, only 35 people can be in the stadium as media members covering each one of these practices.
Well, that's crazy, especially for a city like New York.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes.
As we're talking to Marley Rivera with us, our ESPN Major League Baseball reporter. So, Marley, I saw you tweet on Saturday that two players for the Yankees had tested positive, DJ LeMahieu
yes.
and Luis Sessa. Has there been any other updates as far as the testing, the players, or any of the members of the organization involved with that?
The only update was yesterday from Aaron Boone, who actually said the testing was complete, and those were the only two positives. So at this point, the Yankees are saying, they're stating, that out of their entire staff and, you know, members of the staff and players that are currently at Yankee Stadium working out, that only these two players, like you mentioned, pitcher Luis Sessa and, of course, you know, superstar DJ LeMahieu, the two of them are still at home. And it is worth noting that these two players tested positive before getting to New York. So it wasn't part of the intake testing, which is this three-day process that every single player and staff member has to go through. And then these guys tested at home positive. So they're self-isolating at home. So Sessa and LeMahieu haven't been at Yankee Stadium at all. So at this point, this is where we are. Just these only two players are supposedly the ones who tested positive for COVID-19.
And Marley, just for everyone who's wondering and might not know, for them to rejoin the team, what has to happen now that they've self-isolated and they're quarantining at home?
There's a very, very detailed process that is about 6 pages on that document that I talked about. Of all the things that need to happen before these players are allowed, you know, to rejoin the team. To just summarize it in a very simple way, there are 3 rounds of testing and 2 rounds where you have to give you know, negative to these particular coronavirus tests. So there's just a whole process where you have to test negative twice, and then you get continued to be tested. And then after that, you get isolated, and then you can rejoin the team. So it is really incredible the amount of, you know, guidelines and protocols that have to be followed and need to be followed at this unprecedented time.
Well, thinking of things that need to happen. Debbie Trout, Mike Trout's mother, put out a picture of him working out with a mask on and said, if Mike Trout can work out with a mask on, you can wear a mask going to the grocery store, hashtag wear a mask. And Marley, Mike Trout is one of many people who is going through the process but still has major doubts about whether or not this will actually be a success. We heard the great sound from Sean Doolittle of the Nationals basically saying, hey, sports should be a reward for a functioning society, and we're having massive outbreaks way more than what we had when we shut the whole thing down in March. So where are you engaging the temperature, for lack of a better term, on some of the big players in the game that have real concerns about whether or not this is going to be a feasibility?
It feels like this balance can tip any time, that a lot of them are still considering it. And I really appreciated the sincerity, right, that came out of someone like Mike Trout, who is, you know, considered the face of the game and the, you know, one of the best players of our time. And him saying straight up, you know what, I'm going to have a kid. You know, my wife is pregnant with her first child. This is an incredibly important time in my family. And I don't know that I'm ready, you know, to kind of put them in jeopardy, which is what he believes. So then at this point, Mike said, I am here. I'm working out, but I don't know if I'm going to finish this whole, you know, preseason process and this 60-game abbreviated season. And we hear that a lot from a lot of players who are saying, I'm here, but I just don't know what I'm going to do. We just saw David Price walk away from $11 million, right, saying, I want to spend time with my family. And this is one thing that people have to remember. The average age in Major League Baseball is in the late 20s. A lot of these guys are starting their first families. And we just know about Gerrit Cole just had his first baby on June 30th. I mean, this child is barely a week old, little Caden Gerrit Cole. And Gerrit has said, you know, we decided, my wife Amy and I, that we were going to do this. And it is a very, very personal decision. Just imagine having your first child. But then again, Gerrit is one of those competitors that says, you know what, the Yankees did sign me to a record-setting $324 million deal, so I am going to give him the best I can. And I also think the Yankees do know that they're one of the favorites this season. And in a short season, they can certainly take whatever people believe is going to be, you know, some sort of World Series title in this abbreviated 60-game season.
ESPN MLB reporter Marley Rivera with us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And there is that baseball element. There's the competitive element to this.
Yes.
And so I'm curious, you mentioned you had the simulated game starting when this all happened with Masahiro Tanaka. I'm curious, though, as someone who's around this when things are normal, seeing it now, how comfortable did the players look getting back and trying to actually go through baseball activities with all this as a backdrop?
You know, it's almost something that obviously, as we mentioned before, you know, when we first started talking, our access to the player is very limited, so we actually can't see them from very close. But we do, you know, we have our binoculars and we take a look at them. And they look pretty normal. Like, it's almost like the weird part is the fact that they don't touch. And that it's really interesting. Every once in a while, someone will make the mistake of do a fist bump, and you can kind of see their fear in their face, right? Or make the mistake in that document that I talked to you guys about. It actually outlines the fact that you can't spit on the field and things like that. And then you'll see them, you know, do things like that because it's a natural behavior. So that's the one thing that you see. They feel a little bit uncomfortable with all these rules and regulations where you really can't touch your teammates. You have to be, you know, your locker has to be 6 feet away from each one of them. And that's the part that a lot of them have talked about. A lot of them, you know, a lot of sports we always talk about, and the reason why we love sports, it's this camaraderie, right? And this whole, you know, thing that happened between a team and they create this spirit of competition. It almost feels that that's fractured a little bit because they can't establish, you know, this kind of spirit of competition that we're used to. They sort of jout around all the time and play around and jump at each other. And not seeing that is kind of interesting, actually, as a media member who is so used to seeing these guys interact with each other.
Yeah, I mean, the odds of one player going through a game without spitting, let alone an entire team going through an entire season without spitting, is a 0% chance that that's going to happen. But it is a weird place we're in, and we'll see as baseball tries to begin the process of starting a season, which, again, is so much different than what the NHL and the NBA are doing in trying to finish a season in a pandemic. Marley, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for your insights this morning.
It is my pleasure, gentlemen. Stay safe and wear your mask.
Yes, absolutely. Where, thank you, Marley.
Great advice.
It doesn't seem like it's that difficult, yet somehow it is.
It's really not that hard.
So because of that, would it be better off if no sports were played? Hear why one NBA veteran thinks that that might be a valid point. We'll get to that after this.
After this word from Pennzoil, not all motor oils are created the same. Motor oil made from crude oil contains impurities, but Pennzoil synthetic motor oils, they're made from natural gas. Its base oil is 99.5% free from impurities. It gives you unbeatable engine protection, so next time you get an oil change, ask for Pennzoil. The proof is in the Pennzoil based on Sequence 4A wear testing using SAE 5W30, a respected NBA veteran with a solution that not a lot of people are going to want to hear. Back after this, it's Golic and Wingo.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. Very interesting where that went.
All right, Golic and Wingo with you on a Monday morning. Hope your 4th of July holiday weekend was safe and fun. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you as we're getting set for a very big week in the NBA, Mike, because this is the week when the teams will travel. The 7th, the 8th, and the 9th, all 22 teams that are going to be in this thing to try and win this thing are heading to Orlando, where they will be ensconced in their bubble, and they will be quarantined, and then we'll get ready to roll with all of this. So this is a big week, and this is why it's a big situation where we saw what happened over the weekend from our own Adrian Wojnarowski, where the Milwaukee Bucks, the favorite to win it all, and they had the best record in the NBA before the hard shutdown in March. They had to shut down their facility because of some positive COVID tests.
Yep, absolutely. So something to watch there. But as I said, much like making the band, we've seen a lot of places shut down the studio before. It seems to be all done in an effort to just get everyone to the bubble and then start to go for the protocol they've prepared for there.
So they're headed to the place where our next guest already is, and that is our intrepid ESPN NBA reporter, Malika Andrews, who has made it from the pre-bubble into the actual bubble where the teams will be headed down to in Orlando. So first and foremost, Malika, thanks for being with us. Congratulations on making it from the pre-bubble to actually inside the bubble. How is the experience so far?
Is that something that a congratulations is worth? I'm not totally sure. But I mean, since I got into the bubble officially on Thursday, I've been confined strictly to my room. I get to leave once a day to go and get a COVID test, which is in a ballroom that's in the hotel. It's just a 2-minute walk from my room. But every day I get meals delivered to my door at 9 a.m., noon, and 6 p.m. Someone knocks to let me know that it's there. I open the door after a couple of seconds so that it's completely hands-free and contact-free when I'm dealing with any of the staff. And officially, my quarantine is scheduled to end today after registering 7 negative tests. And I will trade in this green band that I got when I officially entered quarantine for the Aura Ring kit that the players also have that tracks any potentially early symptoms of coronavirus, as well as a device that will beep if I get within 6 feet of another person. So officially, that quarantine is supposed to end later today.
Just an incredibly detailed process, but that's what's expected at this point. And so I'm curious for you and really for any of the players that you've talked to as they gear up for this, how have all these preparations and precautions eased or maybe ramped up some of their anxiety about coming to the bubble?
Yeah, I mean, the emotions for players run the spectrum, but I spoke with Garrett Temple on a Zoom call with other reporters on Sunday, and he said that nervous anxiousness sums up how he is feeling, and that's mostly just because there is this sense of just wanting to see what is going to happen. There is so much unknown for these guys, and I can relay my experience of what it's been like, and it should be similar for them for the first 2 days of the quarantine they're going through. But obviously, from a basketball standpoint, there is just so much that still needs to be discovered. And so you have players also like JJ Redick who have said, don't conflate my confidence in my decision to go and play, which he said he really did want to go and play, and it wasn't really a tough decision for him, with a comfort in what it's going to be like inside the bubble, because there is no comfort for a lot of guys, even though they trust that the NBA has been as careful as they can be in putting together this protocol.
Malika Andrews with us, speaking inside the NBA bubble. Well, she will be for the duration. The Milwaukee Bucks hope to be there for the duration as well, Malika. They had the best record in the NBA before the season came to a halt. They have the odds on champion, the odds on favorites to win the championship when it's all said and done. But they had to shut down their facility over the weekend because of positive tests. How much of a concern is that for the team that is right now the favorite to win it all?
You know, I checked in with a source with the Bucks, and they just told me that they were mostly bummed about the timing. You know, like you said, they are not expected to open the facility again before they travel to Orlando this week. And for a lot of guys, these last 2 weeks where they've actually been able to be inside the practice facility is the first time they've been able to touch a basketball in a while. You had Chris Middleton just this past week tell me that he actually hadn't likely touched a basketball, he guessed, in 2 or 3 months before he was able to go back into the training facility just because he didn't have access to one in his home. And so that's really where the concern lies for them, is just in the timing of they were just starting to get into this rhythm of getting their feet back under them, their basketball feet. You could see when Mike Budenholzer spoke this past week that he was excited, even though they were just individual workouts, to have players in the facility getting some practice in before they were going to make that leap and take the trip to Orlando. So really, from that standpoint is where there is a little bit of frustration, just in terms of they want to be prepared. This is a team I've been around for the past 2 years, and they are so incredibly competitive. They want to win so badly and be prepared so badly. And so this could potentially be a little bit of a bump in that road to heading to Orlando.
Talking to Malika Andrews with us, our ESPN NBA reporter inside the bubble in Orlando. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and she joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So, Malika, we've talked about the preparations health and safety-wise. You've talked about the competitive basketball aspect of this that's starting to ramp back up. And let's talk about the third prong that we know exists. Everything that's gone on in this country with the movement surrounding social justice, that was a big concern for a lot of players. Where are we at the latest with the NBA and the NBA players' plans going forward to try and honor the messages that we know are so important to them inside the bubble?
Yeah, so from a metaphorical standpoint, from a messaging standpoint, if you will, Black Lives Matter, as we know, is expected to be printed on the court. And players, the NBA and NBPA, were able to finalize some approved messages that can be written across the back of their jersey, like, say her name, Black Lives Matter, different things like that. And players think that's good, that's nice, that is messaging they want to get out there for people to see during their basketball games. But also from talking to different guys, there's just this urgency that they want to just make sure that those messages, those metaphors, that imagery is followed up also by real tangible action. So again, Garrett Temple spoke yesterday about the fact that he's excited that the NBA seems to be financially committed to investing in Black businesses. He was excited by the prospect of reinvesting some of the money he earns in Orlando into Black-owned businesses. And so that's really where players stand at this point, is just making sure it's clear that the NBA is going to, from an imaging standpoint, keep this cause front and center. They also just want to continue the behind-the-scenes work that can actually make real tangible change to policy that affects Black lives.
Listen, we'll see how that plays out. We'll see how it plays out. This is a huge week as all the teams, the 7th, the 8th, and the 9th, will be traveling from their respective cities to the bubble in Orlando, and the great experiment will begin. Malika, we appreciate your time. We appreciate the things you have done to be prepared and be inside the bubble, and we look forward to chatting with you as this thing goes along. Be safe, okay?
Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
7 tests already.
I can say just hearing that and the level that she's had to go through there, all the different, you know, decals that you're going to have on, the badges and the lanyards to try and show where everyone can and can't go. We've heard about the tiered process for people's access leading into this, all of it done in the name of trying to make this as safe as possible. And as we've heard pointed out time and time again, you can do all that and it still not go according to plan. That's the unfortunate part about all this.
Yeah, and we heard J.J. Redick this morning on Good Morning America saying it's a fair discussion to say whether or not we should play. And he said, we're going to try and play. And I can't be upset with anybody who says absolutely we should play or absolutely we shouldn't play based on everything that's going on with this country right now as we deal with the pandemic. So we are underway towards the bubble this week.
This week is going to be big. This weekend was big. Coming up next, it's a simple question that gets a little more complicated because as more sports are returning, we have more options. And I would like to present a potential outsider that maybe you didn't even think of, Mike Golic Jr., as to who won the weekend. We'll get to that after this.
Secret candidate alert. DraftKings is here. Speaking of secrets, it's not a secret anymore. Fight Island's going down. Saturday, fighters are going to go to Abu Dhabi for UFC 251, and DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, is going to put you in the center of the action starting this Thursday with a free shot at a $1 million top prize with your first deposit. Just download the DraftKings app, use code Golic, and it'll get you your free shot at the $1 million top prize for this weekend's UFC 251 contest with your first deposit. That's promo code Golic only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Trey found someone who won the weekend. Back after this on Golic and Wingo.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.